called Freedom Convoy 2022, a cry for freedom and liberty from these COVID overreach mandates and restrictions. Sam, a trucker mechanic in Canada, in Blaise Vanney, joins us to describe the Canadian truckers movement that has captured the world's attention. And then the unnecessary death tolls from COVID continue, sadly. Dr. Dawn Michael tells her story about her husband, an MD saving lives in California, and his untimely death in the hospital due to remdesivir. This is quite a shocking story. And then the United States has sent 224 athletes to compete in the China Olympics, yet reports of other deadly viruses like the viral hemorrhagic fevers and the Nipah virus in China are real. And the potential for bioattacks using novel bioweapons is the concern. Dr. Li Mengyan has some startling information coming out of China. We'll take all that up next, friends, on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Well, there is no bigger story in the world, I think, right now than the Freedom Convoy in Canada. And it has got the attention of the world for sure. There are talks of other countries following suit with the truckers. And you know, the thing about the truckers is it hits the core of humanity, really. Because let's face it, our truckers, they're real people. They're valuable to our society, our way of life. So this will get the attention of probably liberty stealers, I'll call it for the moment here, yeah? I think it's quite interesting that this has taken root here in the face of this pandemic and vaccine mandates and stolen liberties for people around the world here. Let me introduce you first to Sam. And Sam is right there at the center. He's at Wellington and Bay, which is, as they say, pretty much ground zero there. He's a truck mechanic up there and surely on the front lines and seeing what's happening here. And also joining us is Blaise Vanney. He's a long-term resident of Ottawa. They're up there. He's a dual U.S. and Canadian citizen. And he also is a writer for America Out Loud as well, by the way. So a privilege to have both of you here. Sam, I'd like to start with you. And before I've got an interesting audio in a moment I'll play as well. But first, let me get a sense. I'd like you to, if you would, please express to listeners, Sam, what is going on the ground there? What's the sense of truckers? What's the feeling and the passion and the movement all about, please?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for your time on this. Pretty honored that hopefully I can speak to a couple more people than the media is allowing us. But no, the morale here and the sense of hope is large. I'm super proud of the outreach from, I mean, all of Canada, the United States. I personally have been super busy. There's a couple mechanics here that have been really going out of their way to make sure these boys are safe, and the pride and respect for one another, the warmth of the smiles as you walk down the street, high fives and hugs, peace, love, and understanding. And then definitely thrown in with hints of extreme frustration. We definitely feel like there is ulterior motive to make us feel uncomfortable. I've had the privilege of where my service rig is. I've had the privilege of speaking with the hierarchies in the Ottawa Police Department. They're absolutely honored. They are proud of us. They're incredibly empathetic. They know why we're here. They're proud of us for being extremely professional and peaceful. These truck drivers live on the road. This isn't new to us. This is our living room. So just the thought that we've all shown up just to let our government know that we're displeased with how they're handling our lives. We've been alienated. We've been discriminated against. We are hardworking, passionate people. We are all parents, grandparents. I'm pretty sure we're on to a good thing here, and hopefully we can make a representation that is around the world, or heard around the world. I'm proud to be a technician here. I've been displaced. I get the privilege of being all across Canada. In our life, we're pretty broad. Anyways, I can't wait for this to be over, and I don't want anybody to grow old with this, other than the knowledge that your people will ultimately make sure you pay attention and keep your pencil sharp, because it is our money, it is our lives, it is our freedom. There is no contract that says you have the right to tell me what the heck to do. And I don't have a contract to tell you what the heck to do. And if you want to be happy, peace, loving, and free, then come to Ottawa and see it for yourself, because this is the most marvelous movement I've ever witnessed.
A couple of specific thoughts I'd like to get out. You talked about the Ottawa police there and the relationship yep. between them and you. Now, that's a fascinating point. Do you get the sense, I'm guessing from what you said, that you have the support of those folks on the ground? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. They're so proud of us for, like, it's textbook protest. We're gonna accomplish our mission with happiness, and there's no contingency plan for it. They have no idea how to battle happiness.
Actually, I love what you said with that. I wrote it down, Sam. I'm giving that quote to you. They don't have a contingency plan to battle us. That is a quotable quote. And let me ask you that: the unpreparedness of the Prime Minister Trudeau. What's being said about him and this overreach that has clearly happened with Trudeau?
Well, personally, you know, I mean, there's definitely people that are expressing a lot of frustration with our Prime Minister right now. Mm-hmm. There's different levels of it, that's for sure. I'm not that guy. I'm not a hater. I'm very, very disappointed. I watch CPAC. I mean, our parliamentary system, it should be just ashamed of itself. I've never been able to get out of a situation without giving a straight answer. I mean, I can't diagnose your vehicle without knowing all the facts and clear answers. I mean, that's what conjugal thinking is all about. And the way that they lay blame, and it is so pathetic. I mean,
All right.
As far as what needs to be done in Parliament here.
Well, what does need to be done?
Know.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau should have definitely, even with his so-called medical situation right now, there is no reason he couldn't stood 6 feet away from us and talked through a mask into a microphone.
Well, hold on. Let me tell listeners, you're speaking about the fact that he just contracted COVID. Is that correct?
Oh yes, he went the day I left the farm. Mm-hmm. It was known that he had just had a close contact mm-hmm. with someone who had the novel COVID. I can't even say it; it drives me crazy. Whatever COVID-19, and Yeah, so then he was in isolation at the Rideau cottage, right. I believe. Like I said, I've been busy orchestrating these boys working around here. So
I actually heard reports, Sam, that some people thought that was a setup, that maybe he didn't have it, and that was an excuse to get out of Dodge. I don't really know, and that's not the point.
It doesn't
here.
Matter if you have
exactly.
COVID or not. Sorry, I didn't
exactly.
talk over you.
No, that's
it doesn't
right.
matter if you have COVID or not. It doesn't stop your voice.
That's it. You're exactly right. All right, let me do this.
The men and women that have been working hard to keep this all together right. and flowing for the last 2 years, and right. you know, really, if anything, they were fine tuning us for this, because you were forcing us out of restaurants, you were making us plan ahead and have right. forethought right. for our future, because with the overreach, you mm-hmm. know,
Yeah,
I travel from one coast to the other.
It sounds like they just pushed a little too far, Sam. It's what it sounds like. Yeah. And they push it.
Well, the world knows they were being pushed too far.
Well, here's the thing. That's exactly what you just say. You know, this is why this is a model protest, what's happening there. I'm so proud of you guys and what you're doing up there, man, because it is a model protest. Yeah, it's a model protest for the entire world. All right. Let me do this. Stay right there, Sam, and also Blaze as well. And I want to play, and I want you both to hear this, and this is an audio clip, if you will, that just impressed me. And this audio is from a trucker in Canada there who expressed quite interest in the way he expresses this. Now, we did have to beep a few words out of this, but other than that, it was definitely worth it. I want you all to listen into this here. It's just a minute and something here. Here we go here.
So one of the things I want to say is there's a lot of talk going on about how this is a white nationalist movement. Now, people are focusing on the two or three people with the Nazi flag that they saw in a group of a million people. Let me break down something called sample size. Now, when you've got a million people and you've got three people in that group carrying a Nazi flag, because everybody loves science, scientists are called outliers. The bigger your sample size is, the more outliers you're going to find. That's just statistics. Meaning, if you have a big enough sample size, you can find a Teletubby. Why? Because you have such a big population, you can find just about anything. Guess what? They did the same shit with the PCR test. If you use a PCR test and you magnify it big enough, you can find just about anything. And to judge an entire convoy of millions of people off 10 people in that millions of people are doing is f***ing ludicrous. Out of 100,000 Canadians, 104 of them are incarcerated. Should we judge all Canadians as criminals based on that logic? The most people affected by vaccination passports are minorities, meaning blacks, white, Asians, and Hispanics, and native people. So that means if it was a white nationalist movement, why would a white nationalist movement stand up for something that would allow these minorities to get their jobs back? Because no longer would they be segregated. This is not about being anti-vax or vax. This is about freedom and having the choice and not being fired from your job and be able to break bread for the choices you make to not take a shot. Meaning, if this was a white nationalist movement, why would they support minorities going back to work to break bread and put food on the table? Don't get it twisted. The real Nazi movement is segregation. The real Nazi movement is telling people that they have a disease so they can segregate them from society and block them from breaking bread and putting food on the table for their family.
Okay, so you hear that audio clip. The passion in there was incredible. And I'd like to get you, Sam, to opine on what he says there. He says, and listen to this, this is not about being vaxxed or anti-vaxxed. This is about freedom and having the choice and not being fired from your job and to be able to break bread for the choices you make to not take a shot. What do you say to that?
100%. That's the reality of it. I mean, yes, most of the boys that I support here, they are they're immigrants. They were raised in communist countries, and they are supporting me 100%, not as I am supporting them. They have filled me in. They're like, look, dude, we've seen it firsthand. We know what happens when they get their way with this. That's why we came to Canada. It's the land of the free.
Stay right there a moment. I want to bring Blaze onto the conversation here. And I want to ask you, Blaze, you're hearing Sam and I talk about this, but that audio clip I just played, I'd like you to comment on, this is important because he talks about the real Nazi movement in here. I thought it was a fascinating way to put it. The trucker says, don't get it twisted. The real Nazi movement is segregation. The real Nazi movement is telling people that they have a disease so that they can segregate them from society and block them from breaking bread and putting food on the table for their family. Now, that was some pretty strong words. What's your thoughts on that, Blaze?
Perfect. Well, first of all, I'd like to just remind everybody that Nazi stands for National Socialist German Workers' Party that adopted explicitly socialist planks February 20th, I believe, 1920. I'm doing that from memory. Anybody can easily verify the Nazi Party planks just by doing Nazi Party planks on using DuckDuckGo. Don't use Google, by the way, friends. One other thing. These people, these elites that are are pushing down just the common people like Sam and everybody that's on Wellington Street there. Just a note to them, if they're listening, you do not have the human terrain. Just like in Vietnam, unfortunately, you know, we didn't have the human terrain, and the U.S. basically lost the war there. So, Mr. Trudeau, you do not have the human terrain, long and short, and therefore you are going to lose this war. I'm using the term war loosely, if I may. But here's the thing, you know, this trucker that you played the broadcast of, you know, again, they're calling these people Nazis, et cetera. And also, I was watching CTV, one of the two national TV stations, they use the Russia trope. And my concern is this. Can you just come up with a new cliche? You know, isn't that getting a little old? Might they, instead of saying Russia's behind it, why don't they say Botswana or Uzbekistan? Just, you know, give us a little variety here, guys. I mean, the stupidity of these people is they have this game plan, you know, and every play they run is through this, you know, if you're a football player, it's through the three hole or whatever else. And they keep repeating it. They're not smart people. They're just doofuses. You know, it's like a dam breaking up. You know, there's a few cracks at first, and then the cracks get larger and larger. And finally the whole dam goes. Premier Mo is, you know, Saskatchewan is a smaller province, but, you know, it's the cracks are starting. And if I was some of these Klaus Schwab World Economic Forum elites, mm-hmm. at George Soros behind this, I'd be quaking in my boots, because you don't, as I say, you do not have the human terrain. And one other thing I'll mention, mm-hmm. briefly is, for example, this quote Confederate flag thing in Major's Hill Park. I've lived in Ottawa for a decade. I walked every day to work through Major's Hill Park, or sometimes I went through the market. And I go for walks at night very regularly in Major's Hill Park. It is off to the side of the protest, first of all. So I would love to bet somebody $1,000 and that this was some Antifa-type person who unfurled the flag for, you know, 30 seconds. They got a snap, and then he had his glasses on and his hat on, his mask on, mm-hmm. typical Antifa, so you can't identify. Got the snap and ran off. But here's the thing. These stupid people, you know what, hint to Antifa and the World Economic Forum, Canada was not involved in the United States Civil War, okay? And, you know, people understand in Canada what the Civil War was, but it really has no resonance. If they had any intelligence, they would put up a Vive le Québec libre or some kind of something that has resonance to Canada. The other thing, if you watch these videos, and I've been watching a lot on Ottawa walks, there's a guy on YouTube, he just walks around for an hour and it's very well done. But you will notice, and this was really significant to me, not only a lot of young people, so they're losing the human terrain there. But, you know, we live in the U.S. now, you know, there used to be major French-English battles. There's all kinds of Quebec flags up there. And so the point is they have now unified, mm-hmm. the French and the English. There is some American animosity among some Canadians. That's all gone. I've seen people flying the Gadsden flag, you know, don't tread on me, mm-hmm. flag. Yeah. So there's unanimity with Americans, with the French. They're uniting the world. So Mr. Soros and your ilk and Mr. Schwab, you are uniting the world, and you're having the opposite effect.
The thing about it with the elites that you talk about is they always use race as the stop that they use to throw out there to light people up. And that's been the problem here, Sam, in America. Obviously, you're having the same problems there, of course. What is it that they use the lowest possible denominator to divide the people? But in this case, what Blaise says is actually very correct. It's uniting the people, isn't it?
there's no room, there's no patience for racism. I mean, I grew up as a, I'm colorblind, or I have color deficiencies. All you have to do is run with your heart. The fact that people would prefer to sit down and focus on supporting certain groups or whatever, wherever their passion is, that's what freedom is. You're more than willing to do whatever you want and wherever you want. You should have a fine-tuned system of government to control the masses in a fair manner. Mm-hmm. And that just helps succeed in progress, not to direct the herd, so to say.
What's the end result? What happens? How does this thing end, please?
Oh, it ends with a fair address from our prime minister and an end to all this overreach. I mean, we don't have anywhere else to go. We've lost our jobs. We've been displaced. We've been alienated. We've been left in the parking lots. This is actually a marvelous place for us to be. The support of this town, the locals' support, and the heartfelt cards and letters and hugs from the children that are coming out into the cold all year plugged up to be a part of it. That's it for me. I mean, I'm here for the children. That is my end goal. I want a fair, honest answer. And that's something that Parliament's been, they need to be. Yeah.
All right. That's perfectly said.
They're countrymen.
All right. Perfectly said. Blaze, let's get your, the end result. Sam puts it out there and says, well, he expects that address from Trudeau. So he's expecting victory from this because they're not going to back down. How do you see it, sir?
Yeah, I agree with Sam. Here's the thing. Last night, I used to live in Edmonton, Alberta as well, and I was watching a bunch of high school kids that are protesting the mask wearing, et cetera, in Drayton Valley. It's west of Edmonton. So now it's even gotten down to the youth that are saying, look, we're sick of this. Here's how it ends, very simply, using the Vietnam trope. You remember that iconic picture of the last helicopter out of Saigon, and they were landing, I think, on a rooftop, and some people were trying to escape, you know, up the ladder onto the helicopter. Very iconic picture. That picture, you can just put Mr. Soros, Mr. Schwab, Mr. Trudeau, they're manning that helicopter, and they are flying off, having to abandon, well, in this case, Vietnam, in this case, Canada, because they don't have the human terrain. Sam is just a trucker. I'm just a vanilla project manager. I have a full-time job. I don't have the time to commit to this stuff, but I'm doing it because it's for truth and justice. And it's people just want to see truth and justice. And when it's taken from us, as I've said to other people, when you PO, I'm short for, I don't want to say pissed off, but when you PO Canadians who are normally terminally polite and nice, you've gone too far.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, there's so much to happen with this Freedom Convoy. This is just the spark again. It's kind of the spark heard around the world, I guess, is the way I'd describe it here. I sort of have a real feeling or a jump in my step, my friends, that in hearing both Sam and Blaze say they expect that to happen, that means they're not going to back down. And that really is the crux of this. And with the support of the community, again, you know, I'll read you here real quickly a tweet from our fellow brother, Dr. Peter McCullough, which I think sums this whole exercise up real well. And he says this: if everyone says no to it now all over the world, the whole thing crumbles. It disintegrates. The crisis has rekindled and reunited us all over freedom. Canada, we are with you all the way. Never again let this get out of control. Take it back and hold on to it for good. Wow. Man, does that speak to me, I have to tell you, from Dr. Peter McCullough. Wow. And accompanied that was a video that expressed some of the the love and the peacefulness of that Sam was describing of this major event in Canada that has taken place. Incredible moment of history, I think. But, you know, it was coming to this, my friends. It was coming to this because something had to give, because they were not never letting go of liberty. They were locking it down. In fact, these elites were doubling down is what was happening. And it was the endless pandemic. So I guess it'll be freedom lovers will end it once and for all. So it's a beautiful thing for liberty, a beautiful thing for humanity. Again, tremendous thank you to Sam and Blaze here. Now, up next here, I've got a very special program coming up now. Dr. Dawn Michael joins us from California. This is a heart-wrenching story you must hear on remdesivir that killed her husband, who is a doctor as well, an MD, just a couple of weeks ago. And anyways, this gets really, really interesting with remdesivir and some of the things you all need to know about it. Stay right there. We'll join you on the other side here. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years, and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud, yours truly, and thank you as always, my fellow Americans and Canadians, and from folks around the world. A lot of Australians and Europeans listen to the show and the platform here. Welcome in, and it's a pleasure and happy to have you on the mission with us. You know, sometimes these things happen in life and a story just talks to you. This is one of those right now. And this comes back to the fight of COVID. Specifically, a drug you've been hearing about, potentially remdesivir, is the drug I want to talk to you about, and the implications of you using this in the fight of COVID. Let me bring on now Dr. Dawn Michael joins us. And let me just tell you briefly, Dr. Dawn Michael, she's a nationally recognized expert in marriage, family therapy, and human sexuality. She's an author, public speaker, mother of two, and now running for mayor in Moore Park, California. Now, Dr. Dawn, your story, as I look at it, took a turn, not in a good way, because of this, I'm going to call it COVID malpractice. Those are my words, but you'll address the audience in a moment. And let me have you tell us what really happened here with your husband. And you had COVID as well, I understand. Yes?
Yes. Thank you for having me on. He's a family practice doctor. He's been in Thousand Oaks for 35 years practicing medicine. Okay. He's also the director of Cal Lutheran University. And he assisted surgery under Dr. Tony Brown in the 90s at Los Robles Hospital. He has been curing people from COVID for the past 2 years with ivermectin, and he had his own protocol, and he was able to get the medication from a small compound pharmacy. He had sent over 9 patients to Los Robles Hospital, and he made the hospitalist, Dr. Graham, follow his protocol. Unbeknownst to me, I don't think that the doctors liked his protocol over at Los Robles.
But did they follow it, Dr. Dawn? Did they follow it?
They only followed it because my husband literally was on the phone with them 24/7. He would get back from his office. I would hear him at night calling to make sure that they followed his protocol.
So he was a medical warrior. He was a warrior on the front lines with us here.
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. Wow. He was saving people. None but one of his patients passed away, and that one patient didn't follow his protocol at the hospital.
Okay. So you and he contracted COVID what, at the beginning of January?
We had both had COVID 2 years ago. So, and my husband had been helping people who had COVID in his office, and he was fine. Unfortunately, I'm not going to get into my feelings about the Delta, but we both got into the Delta, which presented itself completely different than when we had COVID. So my husband thought that he just had the flu because it was like a high fever for 3 days, and then it stopped for 2 days, and then it started. So what happened is he didn't put himself on ivermectin, and he thought he was okay after the 5th day. He actually went out sailing. That was his love. Came back the next day. He literally couldn't breathe. I mean, his oxygen was under 80. Mm-hmm. He said, "You have to take me to the hospital." I said, "No, no." But I had to at that point. I had given him ivermectin the day before and all the vitamins. Took him to the ER. They wouldn't allow me in. He couldn't talk to me at that point because he couldn't breathe. So I didn't find out till the next day that it was hell for him in the ER. Finally got him a bed in the ICU. Couldn't talk to him for 2 days. And they put him on remdesivir. Now, he had already been sick for 10 days. And I understand from speaking to his doctor that after 5 days, if you put someone on remdesivir, it becomes toxic. Mm-hmm. So in the hospitals, the remdesivir is supposed to be like the ivermectin HCQ, but it's not because it has a horrible side effects and it destroys your kidney.
And what did he end up dying from?
He ended up dying from kidney failure and cardiac arrest.
Wow.
Now, yes. And it gets worse because on the 3rd day when I was able to speak to him, I said, "They did not put you on remdesivir, did they?" And he said, "No, they put him on another medication. I have it written down. It starts with an O." Mm-hmm. I looked it up and I thought, there's something wrong here. I called him back and I called the nurse or the doctor. I'm not sure. They said, "No, he was on remdesivir."
Wow.
So the doctor that he has known for 20 years, mind you, the nurses and doctors know him at Los Robles Hospital. This is what's so chilling for me. This doctor gave him the hospital protocol, not the protocol that my husband, that he knew, recommended for his patients. Hmm. They didn't ask him how long he had been sick for. Now, at the same time, I unfortunately was taken to the hospital. I believe this was God's will because I really wasn't that sick, but unfortunately, my son, a neighbor, and a Belial calling wanted me at the hospital there. I believe that he knew he wasn't going to make it and maybe thought by some miracle I could see him, which didn't happen until he had passed. But in any event, my horror story in the ER is probably just as bad as his. I can go into that another time.
Right. The fact that your husband, the doctor, Dr. Ramos, was on the front lines treating people for this over a couple of years, a medical warrior of truth, and we know them out there, and then succumb to the same problems we've all been fighting on and that he's been fighting on with some things that just went the wrong way, including the fact he didn't get the early treatment. He didn't realize he had it. I think a lot of us feel invincible to that. And then he got caught in that whirlwind of what COVID does and attacking your body and the kidney failure of the remdesivir, which is a toxic drug. This remdesivir is.
The sad thing was, is I did have him taking ivermectin, but it wasn't till day seven. And he did continue on it for 7 days. So he didn't need to be on the remdesivir.
Exactly. He had that prior to going into the hospital, the ivermectin?
He had it a day prior, and I had given it to him, and he had it in the hospital, and he was taking it.
Yeah, I know your story is almost picture image of mine, except the end result was different. My wife ended up living and not dying, but it's the same story. Ivermectin was administered beforehand, but the remdesivir was the problem, and you have to fight the hospitals, right? What I want to do, I want you to hear this next clip I want to play, and I so want listeners to hear this. Now, it's important you listen very carefully to what I'm going to play. This is very crucial to the conversation you and I are having right now about remdesivir, and this is from Dr. Paul Merrick. And Dr. Paul Merrick is the founder and co-chief medical officer at Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, the FLCCC. Dr. Paul Merrick is a professor of medicine also, who served as chair of the Division of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at Eastern Virginia Medical School in Norfolk, Virginia. Well, well regarded all over the world. And he spoke at the recent Senate hearings with Senator Ron Johnson and Dr. Peter McCullough. And everyone needs to hear what he says about remdesivir, and we'll talk on the other side of this. Listen in, please.
In this country, 4 million patients have been hospitalized with COVID, and of those, 850,000 poor souls have died. 850,000 people have died. These have been unnecessary, needless deaths. The NIH guidelines for the treatment of hospitalized patients for COVID include remdesivir and low-dose dexamethasone. Consequently, almost every single patient in this country is treated with a combination of remdesivir and low-dose dexamethasone. The PALM study group investigated 4 drugs for the use of Ebola. The results were published December the 12th, 2019 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And that date is particularly important because that signaled the beginning of COVID. The Data Safety Monitoring Board of that study terminated the study of remdesivir, because remdesivir increased the risks of death and renal failure. It was such a toxic drug, the Data Safety Monitoring Board terminated the use of remdesivir. Yet, in January and February of 2021, the NIH and the ACT-1 study enrolled patients in a study looking at remdesivir for the treatment of COVID-19. The last patient was enrolled April 19, 2020. 10 days later, before the study had actually terminated, Dr. Fauci sat in the Oval Office of the White House, and he said the trial was good news. What Dr. Fauci did not tell you was that the primary endpoint of the study was changed halfway during the study. We all know that is scientific misconduct. Because the study was not going to be positive, they changed the primary endpoint. The original endpoint was an 8-point ordinal scale that included death and a requirement for mechanical ventilation. Knowing that remdesivir would not affect those endpoints, they invented a bogus endpoint called time to recovery, which they showed in this study was statistically significant. And based on this bogus endpoint, remdesivir was approved by the FDA on October the 20th, 2020. Remdesivir increases the risk of death. Let me say that again. Remdesivir increases the risk of death by 3%. It increases your chances of renal failure by 20%. This is a toxic drug. But just to make the situation even more preposterous, the federal government will give hospitals a 20% bonus on the entire hospital bill if they prescribe remdesivir to Medicare patients. The federal government is incentivizing hospitals to prescribe a medication which is toxic.
So the federal government will give hospitals a 20% bonus on the entire hospital bill if they prescribe remdesivir to Medicaid patients. The federal government is incentivizing hospitals to prescribe a medication which is toxic. Now, I've been saying this right along. There's all kinds of incentives to put to COVID on the death certificate, but this one here is related to remdesivir. How do you feel about this after hearing the comments from Dr. Paul Merrick about remdesivir and what you know, and that this is what killed your husband?
I'm very happy it was presented to Congress. It's something that I want to get the stories out to Congress. I am a researcher, so I have been researching remdesivir for a while now. On my Twitter, I did put a research study with a thread about remdesivir and Gilead, who owns it. And not only are the hospitals making money, but many people are making money. The stockholders, BlackRock, Vanguard, I believe there are some Congress people that have stock in Gilead. And that's one of the reasons that the killing continues in the hospital, because it's back to the almighty dollar again.
Let's talk about this, a potential class action suit. What is the game plan for this, please?
My feeling is my husband, he's a hero, and he is not, his death is not going to be in vain. And there are so many people that have reached out to me with kindness and prayer that have gone through what I have gone through, and it breaks my heart. So in his name, I want to file a class action lawsuit so that these people who have lost their husbands, their sisters, their brothers, not only are they brokenhearted, but they don't have the finances to perhaps support their children or get back on their feet. And I want them to be compensated for this. And I want it to be in my husband's name, because this is what he would have wanted. And I believe this is my purpose and what God wants. And I am following that. And I will not stop until these people get compensated for what they have gone through. That is my mission.
Wow. Dr. Abelio Ramos. I mean, his death should not be in vain after all of this. What you've been through yourself, and you're still recovering from COVID yourself. This was another one. I will say this to you, Dr. Dawn. This was another senseless death. And there were so many, as Dr. Paul Merrick pointed out. They've got the numbers, what, around 900,000 or some million, whatever it is. I've lost count, but a lot of these could have been totally avoided, couldn't they have?
And it's still happening today.
Still happening, yeah.
Every single day, people are dying right now as we speak.
Yeah.
This is what keeps me up at night.
Yeah, I know. It's in circles all around us. I had an email just a couple of days ago from a parent buried their seven-year-old who died from the vaccine shot. By the way, and these things are happening all over the place, without doubt here. This will not be the last time you and I talk. I am certain of it. I am so moved by your story. And I want you to know I'm here and will do everything I can and we can to help you get the word out there on this fight forward, Dr. Dawn Michael.
God must have really wanted my husband in heaven.
because he was doing God's work here on earth. So that's what I believe. And I just wanted to say that.
I mean, it touches your heart. There's no way to put it. Dr. Dawn, this story is so explosive to me and so avoidable, all of it.
Yes.
It's disturbing what we're talking about. And this problem right now that we're speaking about can be magnified all over the world. I mean, it's happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be this way. Thank you, Dr. Dawn Michael. Thank you, Dawn, for joining us.
Thank you.
If COVID was the experiment in how we handle pandemics and deadly viruses, well, I have a news bulletin for you, my fellow Americans. We have failed that endeavor for sure here. I'd like to talk about all that next in this next segment here with Dr. Li Mengyang is here. She is an independent virologist. She was the whistleblower who called out the CCP and got the truth out there about COVID-19. Part of the challenge I think we need to understand right now is that we have over a couple of hundred athletes in China, 224 exactly, that are at the Winter Olympic Games. Yeah, there was a diplomatic boycott, but, you know, ironically, that's for the politicians, you know, so maybe they don't want to go because of the viruses in the wild. I don't know, but I don't think China wanted the diplomats there either. I don't think they wanted them there anyways, the diplomats, to be truthful with you here. However, you know, they send all the athletes on their way. And, you know, what's the chances and the risk? I guess the real question that I ask you to start with before we jump into these specific viruses or these novel bioweapons, if you will, what are the chances? I mean, really, of an athlete bringing another type of virus back here. Is that a possibility or not?
It is a possibility. It is a big possibility. But Malcolm, what we need to let people know is Chinese government, Xi Jinping's regime, has fully prepared to launch another bio attack against the world. It can be in the Winter Olympic as they plan, but it also can be after that, because in China, it is only one brain. The brain is Xi Jinping's brain. So the final way is it's like the press the button of nuclear weapon. So it is up to him. And what we have done from 2 months ago until now is try to stop them to do it during the Winter Olympics, and also warn America and other governments to fully prepare against the later on bio attacks from China.
Now, let me ask you, when you say, and I want listeners to hear this, when you say the potential, or you say, well, you actually said that China is preparing to unleash another bio weapon. Do we really know that? Or do we have evidence of that at all?
We have evidence. We also have sources inside China. And I cannot tell much about the sources. I have the network and my friend has a network. And we work with other people in America. But the thing is, we have already, for example, received the multiple sources told us that what happened in Xi'an, the big city with 13 million people in China before the Olympics, the lockdown actually is a military drill for the viral hemorrhagic fever. And there are also sources that there are novel or marble-like virus happen in the outbreak, but because it's military drill, so the information is well controlled and also the misinformation is well spread by the government.
You know, I'm thinking here as you're talking, Dr. Li Mengyang, and, you know, all of a sudden we're talking about these potential viruses. You know, I'm trying to remember back. It wasn't always this way in China, or was it? I mean, you were born and raised there and then was in Hong Kong thereafter before you came to America. You know, is this all a new way where these viruses are in the wild? Why is there so many of these and so many potential problems? What am I missing? Was it always this way and we just didn't know about it? Or is this a new phenomenon coming out of China where it's like the Wild West of viruses? What's going on there, please?
The thing is, first, we need to understand CCP never care about human life. So they want to achieve their goal. And as we said, COVID gave them a lot of confidence. Xi Jinping believes that he can take over the world. And also the novel unrestricted bioweapons is his great powerful weapon. And this bioweapon actually is very cheap. You need a lot of labor force, and there are enough labor force in China. And then you need to look for that. You just need to get the advanced technology, and you don't need to be so advanced. You can use it to change this virus. It doesn't need to be very accurate or very fancy, but finally it can cause the damage. That's enough for them. So they have prepared a lot of materials, the viruses, and also there is enough problems in our own systems worldwide. So people cannot hold them accountable at this moment. All these are the reasons they want to use unrestricted bioweapon to take over the world. And also China now is focusing on some antidotes. They believe they would find out the antidote, and they already start to manufacture some of the antidotes against the viral hemorrhagic fever. And also they established more labs, not only in China, but also in their friend countries, include Pakistan and also like some in the Africa, the One Belt, One Road Asian countries, all like this. China is expanding their power in the biotechnology world, and the world still didn't realize that. These are all the reasons they want to use it.
And, you know, I remember hearing reports even in regards to COVID-19 early on where they had the antidotes there or were, discovering those early on, but surely we're not going to share them with the world. You know, when we talk about these novel bioweapons, these potential viruses, this is sort of really the way we need to look at this. This is a new sort of warfare. Instead of traditional kinetic warfare, military exercises, or nuclear war, this is sort of the silent killer, isn't it?
It is the silent killer because people didn't realize it is a weapon. The thing is, we need to emphasize this is the unrestricted bioweapon because one part is bioweapon, the other part is misinformation, censorship. So they combine together become so powerful. For example, we have more than many scientists and even people, they are laymen. They realize COVID is not from nature from very early time. However, the misinformation and the censorship make them silenced and also refuted them. So this makes the COVID last for over 2 years, and still we are in the pandemic now. So China is going to conduct such strategies in the future too. That's why they prepared, they use military drills, they train the people about the misinformation, about propaganda, about the censorship, and then they will use it towards the whole world. For example, China can release the next novel bioweapon, no matter whether it is Marvel or Marvel related, and then they blame America. They will say this is American bioweapon to undermine the world.
And then we need to question as to why our government sent 224 athletes out. Clearly, our government has all this information, Dr. Li Mengyang. I mean, they have all of this information. This is not news to them, I am sure of that. But yet they go ahead and risk that. Any idea as to why?
The thing is, we are helping and we are still helping government to do this, to help people to prepare for that. However, you know, the government also cannot mandate the athletes away from China because for the athletes, they prepared for more than 4 years, some even for 20 years. They really want to prove themselves in the Winter Olympics. That's their right to go to
right,
China.
Right, but I'm going to say to you, it doesn't matter if they're dead. I mean, if you die or bring a virus back, all the training in the world isn't going to help, is it?
Yeah, so that's why we need the quarantine and we need examination and we need more measurement to prevent it. And also remember, This is not only towards American athletes. So no matter how well American athletes prepare, remember, China lets the Wuhan virus went to Italy and go from Italy to America, caused the outbreak at that time, and also other countries. So this time it also can happen because China has a lot of athletes, not only from America, all over the world. And if China successfully releases it as planned this time, other people from other countries may carry it during the incubation period and transmit to America.
Exactly.
So it's not only the problem for Americans.
Right. No, it's a problem for all the athletes. You're right. You're exactly right. And, you know, there's always a risk involved. You don't know if somebody, like you say, is carrying any of these viruses here. You know, I want people to understand real quickly the fatality rate and the dangerous nature of these particular viruses or bioweapons we're talking about here. As I understand it and have looked at these stories, there's more serious viruses. The fatality rates is much greater here than even COVID, that the coronavirus ever was. For instance, the viral hemorrhagic fever, you've got a fatality rate that ranges between, as I see here, 24% to 88%. On average, they're saying about 50%. I've seen other reports, even with the Nipah virus, they're around 70 some odd percent. These are very fatal viruses, aren't they?
The viral hemorrhagic fever is comparably quite fatal, especially compared to COVID. However, the good thing is it's not easy for this kind of high fatal virus to cause a big pandemic. So the most of things it will cause is the panic. It will have some outbreak, but if the government already prepared for that, prepare for drugs and trained medical staff, then they can take care of them. And the people should understand if something happens, don't be panicked. And try to recognize the misinformation because you've already learned a lot during the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, you can see how concerning this all is. You know, there were a couple of other topics I wanted to talk to her about, but we're going to, I need to push that on to another day. We've run right out of time here. But a tremendous thank you to Dr. Li Mingyang in bringing us all up to date. Also to Dr. Dawn Michael, who you met a little earlier in the program, and very, very interesting conversation about remdesivir and the death of her husband. Very sad, incredible story there. And the Truckers Convoy for Freedom and our Canadian friends up front in the program. Thank you for joining us here on Viewpoint to this Sunday. Remember, it's time to get involved and get loud.